And you're listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden. I'm going to give you that extended intro to the show today. And on the show, we will take a trip out to Cajun country to learn how One Bar is celebrating French music, language, and culture through weekly radio broadcasts. And we'll also learn about the future of educated savings accounts in Louisiana. And first, we'll hear from Rosemary Westwood on how the recent Supreme Court abortion ruling is impacting the medical industry here in Louisiana. And on that note, some news just broke. Rosemary is reporting that the Louisiana Supreme Court has denied an appeal from abortion providers. That means almost all abortions will continue to be banned in Louisiana. The ban has no exceptions for rape or incest. We'll have more on this news later today during All Things Considered, so stay with WWNO and WRKF. And now we're going to hear from Rosemary, who reported this week for NPR that there's growing fear and confusion inside some hospitals as doctors try to give the best medical care while staying within the bounds of new abortion restrictions. That's especially true right here in Louisiana. As our reproductive health care reporter Rosemary Westwood reports, doctors say a new abortion ban could put their patients and themselves at risk.
Across the country, there is fear and confusion inside some hospitals as doctors try to give the best medical care while staying within the bounds of new abortion restrictions. That is especially true in Louisiana. As Rosemary Westwood with member station WWNO reports, doctors say a new abortion ban could put their patients and themselves at risk.
Dr. Nina Breakstone works in the emergency department of a New Orleans hospital. For the last month, she's been going to work under a cloud of uncertainty.
I'm terrified for myself as a woman of reproductive age, and I'm terrified for my patients.
A Louisiana law now bans nearly all abortions. There is an exception to avoid a substantial risk of death to the pregnant patient or a threat of serious permanent impairment to a life-sustaining organ. But those exceptions are left up to doctors. Get it wrong, and the risks are enormous.
I don't want to go to jail for 10 years for doing the right thing by my patients.
Breakstone said she also doesn't want to deny them medical care. She sees a lot of miscarriages in the ER, but the law only allows abortions for miscarriages if the fetus is already dead. Breakstone said waiting for the fetus to die before she acts could be risky for her patients.
No one has any idea how many things go wrong, how fast things can go wrong, and how deadly that can be.
Dr. Tara Castellano is an oncologist specializing in cancers of reproductive organs. Castellano is worried that cancer patients with a less serious diagnosis might be denied abortions they need to start treatment, like chemotherapy. It will just depend on their doctor's interpretation of the law.
If people are skittish and if you're risk averse as a physician, you might just not want to even go down that road as an option.
Castellano said the law has fundamentally changed medicine.
You know, it's like inviting legislators and administrators and politicians into the exam room.
And potentially prosecutors. Ochsner Health, Louisiana's largest health system, has told doctors it will defend them against criminal charges. But that doesn't protect doctors from being investigated. Proponents of the state's abortion ban argue the law is clear. Angie Thomas of Louisiana Right to Life said they consulted with doctors in drafting the exception. I asked her what she'd say to doctors afraid of prosecution.
I mean, I would tell them, use good faith medical judgment. I mean, don't be fearful of that if you are protecting their life.
Dr. Will Williams is a New Orleans maternal fetal medicine specialist, meaning he sees the most severe pregnancy complications. He sometimes has to tell women that continuing their pregnancies gives them a 20 or 30-fold risk of death. Even for those patients who should still be allowed abortions under the law, Williams worries they won't get them because they're afraid.
And I do believe that there will be women who ultimately have very severe health outcomes, those including death.
Nina Breakstone, the emergency room physician, said she's going to continue to provide abortions for miscarriages.
I think that what I will do is do what I think is best and hope that I don't get charged and chart defensively.
That's been a key bit of advice from hospitals to doctors in Louisiana. Record everything in a patient's chart to defend your choices. And if you're still worried, call a hospital lawyer just in case. For NPR News, I'm Rosemary Westwood in New Orleans.
And you're listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden. Back in April, Louisiana Considered's managing producer Alana Schreiber spoke with Mark Lane, general manager at KVPI radio station in Ville Platte. KVPI, which has been on the radio for nearly 70 years, has a long history of promoting Cajun French language and culture on the airwaves. One of KVPI's most popular segments is a weekly live broadcast from Fred's Lounge, a bar in Mamou, open only on Saturdays. Visitors consist of loyal locals and tourists all the way from France who come to dance, drink, and celebrate the culture. NPR's John Burnett paid a visit to Fred's Lounge in the so-called Cajun Prairie to learn more about the beloved bar.
It's Saturday morning at Fred's Lounge in the town of Mamou, which sits among the rice fields and crawfish ponds of what's called the Cajun Prairie. Inside the Red Brick Tavern, by 8:30 a.m., they're already serving Budweisers and Bloody Marys as couples waltz on the worn linoleum. A sign reads, "Please do not stand on the tables, chairs, or cigarette machine." Nearby sits a radio announcer named Mike Perron. He anchors the live weekly broadcast from Fred's Lounge on the legend 1050 KVPI.
White Blue, loop, playboy, she's heard it me, Oscar never heard it me. All right, guys, back to the bandstand.
Perron is a city councilman, retired auto body repairman, and part-time DJ.
Today we had Fred's Lounge on 6th Street in Big Mamou. I start at 9 o'clock, and then I finish it by 11 o'clock. I do my sponsors mostly in English, but I do some in French. But the people over here, a lot of them don't understand all the French words, so I do it in English, too. We call that a franglais, a little bit of French, a little bit of English. That's how we call that over here.
The live radio feed from Fred's began in the 1960s with a local educator named Rivon Reed. Now his son, Seth Reed, comes here almost every Saturday morning.
We dance, we drink, we have a good time. This is the only bar that's still old-fashioned, old-school. Nothing has changed since it was built. That's what I love about it. They still have the same urinal from back in the 40s, and that's in the bathroom.
The Acadians, or Cajuns, descended from Roman Catholic French Canadians who were expelled from the Nova Scotia region by the British in the mid-1700s. They made their way to the Bayou country of South Louisiana, and here they thrived preserving their culture and folkways. But a number of factors worked against the language. Cajuns were punished for speaking French in school. Cajun GIs left the region to fight in the world wars and learned English. The discovery of oil ushered in more English influences, and television further diluted the language. Radio is part of a broad movement to save Cajun French from extinction. Eight radio stations in southern Louisiana still broadcast partially in French. KVPI, located in Ville Platte, does more than any other. News, weather, talk, a swap shop, even obits in French. This year, the station won a Uniquely Louisiana Award.
All right, bonjour, mes amis. Comment ça va?
While the Saturday morning Cajun music at Fred's Lounge is internationally renowned, the station's most popular program is a daily call-in show.
Ce matin, sur le tasse de café.
It's called the Cup of Coffee, La Tasse, to regulars. Here in deeply conservative Trump country, the callers don't talk about abortion or election fraud or the perfidious Democrats. No. They're talking about where to find the sweetest watermelons, what food to bring to the cemetery on All Souls Day, how to kill maggots under the house, and the best squirrel hunt.
I messed that big side, Charlie.
Well, that's what they do. A happy squirrel weekend, I do.
The station's general manager is Mark Lane, born Martel Ardoin. KVPI signed on the air in 1953. Lane started here when he was in high school, and he's been at the station for 51 years.
We really promote the French language and our French culture, and I want to emphasize Cajun French. there is a bit of difference. We have our own little lingo and our own dialect down here, and we're proud of it.
Don't mess with my toot toot. Don't mess with my toot toot. Now you can have the other woman, but don't mess with my toot toot.
Floyd Swallow, record producer, book publisher, and Cajun personality, is giving a tour of his record store and museum in Ville Platte.
This guy here gave me my biggest worldwide hit, Rockin' Sydney, Don't Mess With My Toot Toot. Yeah, biggie.
You're gonna have yourself a case. I'm gonna break your face. Now don't mess with my toot toot.
Actually, it was Swallow who had the idea for La Tosse back in the 60s. He regularly calls in to tell old yarns in French, but now he's in the minority. Most callers speak English. In fact, most of the French speakers you hear on KVPI, like him, are old.
Sadly, a lot of our Cajun French listeners have passed on, and some of the young people are trying to pick up on it, but it's not coming fast enough. It's going to be a thing of the past, unfortunately, I guess. As my age group goes on, I'm afraid it's going to be tough to keep it going.
The Cajun patois in Louisiana continues its steep decline. The American Community Survey on Language estimated the number of French speakers at about 77,000 in 2020. That's down from 136,000 in just a decade. Barry Jean Ancelet is a renowned folklorist and professor emeritus at the University of Louisiana, Lafayette. While he acknowledges that native French speakers are passing away one by one, he's heartened that young musicians, for instance, are composing songs in French, and Cajun culture overall remains robust.
Are you going to tell Danny Benoit, who makes the best gumbo in the world, loves to hunt and fish, goes out dancing to Cajun music in Zydeco, and you know, has a big family, all the other stuff, and he doesn't speak French, and are you going to go tell him he's not Cajun? I wouldn't do it. And if you do it, I would duck. Because he still feels profoundly Cajun.
In other words, language is only one measure of a culture. If you visit South Louisiana, it still feels profoundly Cajun, especially if you tune your AM dial to KVPI 1050.
Bonjour, Monsieur Charlie Manuel, Monsieur Mark.
Hey, comment ça va, Basile?
Mais ça va, pied, moi j'ai pas voulu aller.
John Burnett, NPR News, Ville Platte, Louisiana.
And you're listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. Last month, I sat down with Capital Access reporter Paul Braun and former education reporter Aubrey Juhas to discuss the significance and possible future of education savings accounts here in Louisiana. Here's that piece.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Aubrey.
Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Patrick.
So, guys, it feels like this conversation has been a long time coming. Do you remember when the two of you first started talking about education savings accounts?
Yeah, it was probably back in early April toward the start of the legislative session. At the time, there were a whole bunch of school choice bills on the table. And while they were geared towards different groups of kids, they all relied on this same mechanism, ESAs, or education savings accounts.
Right. So while Paul kept an eye on how the bills were moving through the legislature, I took a deep dive into ESAs more generally. And we learned that in a lot of ways, ESAs have become this new frontier in the school choice debate.
And how was that so, Aubrey?
Yeah, so I mean, like other voucher programs, ESAs allow families who leave the public school system to take public funding with them and use it to pay for private school, and in some cases, other things like homeschool, online courses, private tutoring, and in some cases, even rolling that money forward towards college tuition, which is kind of a weird thing to think about. But one important way that state-funded ESAs differ from more traditional voucher programs is that rather than give the money directly to schools, the savings account structure means that states are giving this money to parents who then get to decide how to spend it. So it's just kind of this complete parent control scenario that we've seen come up more and more frequently, where parents are just wanting to have even more control over their children's education, even with public dollars.
And it makes sense that elected officials in Louisiana would be pushing for more programs like this right now. Parents' frustrations over pandemic policies and remote learning have really lingered since, you know, the early days of the pandemic. And we've seen school board meetings all across the country become the front lines in the culture war, with big fights over how LGBTQ issues and race are taught in classrooms.
Right. And Paul, how did these bills end up faring in the legislature this season?
So this year we saw lawmakers and lobbyists for school choice push about half a dozen ESA bills. Some were narrowly focused on really small groups of children, like kids with parents in the military or victims of repeated bullying incidents. Others were much broader and would have based eligibility on kids' academic performance. And State Superintendent of Education Cade Brumley was on board with this too.
What we would envision if one or more of these bills were to pass would be the creation of a menu of services for families to choose from. Now, yes, it could be that they might would use the dollars to enroll in a non-public school. It might be that they choose to use those dollars in other ways.
Okay, so Brumley was on board, but not everyone else was, right?
That's right. ESAs were well supported among Republican state lawmakers who have commanding majorities in the state House and Senate. But teachers unions, a small but vocal number of Democratic lawmakers, and Governor John Bel Edwards all opposed these bills. And facing that pushback and an unknown but pretty massive price tag, the sponsor of these bills consolidated their efforts and passed just two. One was focused on students with special needs, and another was on students reading below grade level. And they pitched these scaled back proposals as a proof of concept for larger ESA bills that they hope to bring in the future. All told, though, these bills would have empowered more than 45,000 students to leave their public schools and take their share of state education funding with them.
And based on your reporting, that's concerning for public schools since funding in Louisiana, like most states, is tied to per pupil enrollment, right?
Right. So many schools and districts are already under-enrolled due to the pandemic and declining birth rates, and that's meant figuring out how to scale services to a smaller number of students, which is really challenging when you have fixed costs associated with school buildings and school buses, salaries, insurance for things like hurricanes. And what that often means is fewer dollars ultimately making their way to the classroom and to students, so fewer course offerings and extracurricular activities.
And that potential financial strain schools would likely face was the main reason Governor Edwards cited when he vetoed these bills.
If there's another way to fund something, I might be open to it. But that's not what I believe is right and best. We are primarily responsible for public schools with public money.
And the governor isn't alone on this. While he may be at odds with Republican lawmakers, education researchers we spoke with have their own concerns when it comes to ESA programs. While a lot of research hasn't been done on ESAs just yet, researchers do have data on more traditional voucher programs, including right here in Louisiana. There's a program called the Louisiana Scholarship Program, which allows families whose children attend a public school with a C, D, or F letter grade to send their children to private school instead. And roughly 6,000 children participated in the program this past school year. Doug Harris at Tulane University says the outcome data associated with the Louisiana Scholarship Program is
not positive. You know, the results have shown pretty clear negative effects on student test scores.
Graduation rates haven't been negatively impacted, but he says the program hasn't had any positive effects either. And Harris thinks it's fair to use this research as a barometer for what might happen if the state were to pass ESA programs, since the objective with both is to move students out of public schools and into private options.
Okay, and again, we're talking here with education reporter Aubrey Juhas and Capital Access reporter Paul Braun. I'm Patrick Madden. This is Louisiana Considered, and we're talking about ESA programs here. Paul, what about the accountability angle? We know public schools are monitored by the state. Would private schools that accept public dollars be held to similar standards?
Well, Harris told us that ESA programs frequently have zero accountability for schools, for parents, and for the state. And when we spoke with Oscar Jimenez Castellanos, a visiting scholar at USC's Rozier School of Education, he pretty much told us the same thing.
This type of a ESA voucher program provides the most flexibility, yet the least accountability, and that's not a good mix.
All of Louisiana's bills approach accountability the same way. They would require schools that receive ESA dollars to put students through a norm reference test, but they left it up to the school to decide which one, and that would make it impossible to compare education outcomes of kids across the state. And while traditional voucher programs are targeted at lower and middle income families, like the Louisiana Scholarship Program, for example, it's limited to families with annual incomes no greater than 2.5 times the federal poverty limit. These ESA programs, however, would be open to anyone.
Yeah, and Jimenez-Castellanos told us there's research to suggest that ESA programs in other states have effectively served as a subsidy for wealthier families to send their children to private schools, since the amount of money awarded often isn't enough to cover private school tuition in full.
But in Louisiana, the state wouldn't collect any data on the races or income levels of families participating in the program. It's not a perfect comparison, but you could draw some parallels to the Tops scholarship program at the collegiate level here in Louisiana. When the state started collecting that sort of data for that program about a decade ago, they found that the people who were benefiting the most were white kids from middle and high income families, which doesn't look great in a state with inequities as deep as Louisiana's.
Right. And as a researcher who cares about educational equity, Jimenez-Castellanos says he's been frustrated by the lack of data collection and transparency around ESA programs in other states.
You know, instead of making this sort of a research or a data-driven argument, it really is one that's very ideological.
Okay, Paul, so bring us back to the state legislature. How did things play out this year at the state capitol?
Well, like Jimenez-Castellanos said, it was very ideological. We saw a lot of parents and school choice advocates saying public schools had failed their kids and the state should let them take their tax dollars to educate those kids elsewhere. But they didn't really have any data saying that that would lead to better education results. For his part, Governor Edwards has made it clear that he won't sign any legislation that would devote public funds to private schools. And at least for now, the GOP lawmakers pushing ESAs haven't locked down quite enough votes to override Edwards' vetoes on this particular issue. In fact, earlier this week, they called off their veto override session for this year, signaling that this fight is essentially on hold until next year. But Edwards' days in office are numbered. He's only got a year and a half left, and it's widely expected that he'll be replaced by a Republican, someone who would likely be more supportive of school choice initiatives like ESAs.
And if that happens, education researchers say they're fearful that would, you know, gradually erode public funding and eventually could have catastrophic effects on the services that schools are able to provide. Mm.
All right, well, we're going to have to leave it there, but we'll obviously be following this issue. We want to thank education reporter Aubrey Juhas and Capital Access reporter Paul Braun. Paul and Aubrey, thank you for being here today.
Happy to do it.
Thanks, Patrick.
That was Capital Access reporter Paul Braun and former education reporter Aubrey Juhas. And this has been Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden. Want to thank all of our guests and all the segments we heard earlier today. We heard from Rosemary Westwood and John Burnett, and also heard from Aubrey Juhas and Paul Braun. Our producer for Louisiana Considered is Alana Schreiber. Our digital editor is Caitlin Umholtz. Our engineers are Garrett Pittman, Aubrey Procell, and Thomas Walsh. You can listen to Louisiana Considered Monday through Friday at noon and 7:30 p.m., and it's available on Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Patrick Madden. Thank you for listening to Louisiana Considered.
Major support for Louisiana Considered provided by Rouse's Markets, a Louisiana shopping experience. More at rouses.com, with additional support from the Sazerac House.